Welcome back to SOAR Financially, and welcome back once again to the floor of the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the @JR Mining Guy on Twitter and the CEO of SOAR Financial Group. Really looking forward to this discussion now because we're catching up in person with Andy Shachman over at Miles Franklin. Andy, it's great to see you, buddy.
Kai, good thanks to see you too, brother.
Yeah. Thanks for being on time.
After last year, me forgetting and missing, I wasn't going to miss this one.
So Andy, we recently did an interview via Zoom as well just a couple of weeks ago. So this time I really want to focus on what's happening behind the cameras here. We're at a resource investment conference, of course, but also talk about your workshop and what you want investors to leave the room with.
Right.
Because you only had 20 minutes, which for you is
tough.
A little short, but let's talk about that. What was the theme of your presentation?
The whole theme is logarithmic decay, which I think is an appropriate way of describing a lot of things that are happening around us socially, morally, economically, culturally, where things are being chipped away at whitewashing, if you will, whether it be culturally, whether it be economically, whether it be the judicial system, whether it be the mismanagement of the dollar. All of these things, little by little by little by little by little, are chipping away. And the question is, when is that all at once moment? Whether you're talking things like cancel culture, like censorship, like the questions surrounding the elections where a third of the country believes that they weren't fair, whether you're talking about the way we're perceived globally or the mismanagement of the dollar or the growing coalition of countries, BRICS, and all of these things that are little by little by little chipping away at the culture of this country and of the potentially the world reserve currency. So I find it to be a very appropriate way of describing, in my mind, the world that I see.
Absolutely. Then what is one of the takeaways, though? Is like, how do you leave investors with advice? And of course, we can all describe what we're seeing around us, but how do we act on it? I think that a lot of people have problems acting on the information because they're being bombarded anyway with information, filtering, but also acting.
Well, Zoltan Pozsar, someone who I think is one of the smartest guys in the world, he used to work behind the scenes at the New York Fed. He understands the plumbing of the system, maybe better than anyone. And he talks about this being Bretton Woods 3. Where Bretton Woods 1 was when we took over for the pound sterling at the end of World War II, and Bretton Woods 2, loosely, basically, was when, after we closed the gold window, we became the petrodollar. Bretton Woods 3, he says, is a system that will be denoted and denominated by, or described by, rather, transparency, maybe blockchain, and commodities. So I think we are heading away from debt instruments and opaque debt instruments at that, like treasuries and bonds, which have been shed by a lot of the wealthy countries in the world who are selling bonds and treasuries, and into things like commodities. And it doesn't just have to be gold and silver. It could be things like copper, it could be uranium, it could be liquid natural gas, it could be oil, it could be farmland, agricultural ETFs. It's things that are tangible that you need instead of promises by a government. And if you think, Kai, a bond, which is in essence debt issued by a government or a corporation, has a very short time frame of it being considered an asset in the world stage, whereas gold has a 5,000 year history of it. And so I think whether you're talking gold or any commodity, I think Zoltan is right. This is a system that where transparency and commodities will be the way to, or the pathway, I think, to, in terms of the next level of opportunity and investment, or the next thing is commodities. So broadly diversify within the primary trend. And to me, the primary trend is of rising commodity prices. So broadly diversify within that sector.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, you can't default on gold. You can only steal it.
Yeah, right? Well, that's true. And I think you have a better chance of being ripped off by the system than you do a burglar knowing you have gold. Because in your home, you have time to hide it. And that's one thing a burglar doesn't have. Doesn't have all sorts of time to look for it. It's pretty easy if you use a little bit of thought hide. You can have, in a box this big, you can have, $100,000 worth of gold.
Absolutely. Do you have a favorite commodity right now?
I think there are very few things I've ever seen in my life, Kai, that offer the potential that silver does. And I want people to understand that when I sell gold and silver, I don't sell it as an investment. To me, it's wealth. It's been wealth for 5,000 years. But when you look at silver, both its supply-demand fundamentals, its price historically, its relationship to gold, its expanding utilities in green and digital applications, not to mention military applications, which ironically, the Silver Institute omits from its supply-demand statistics. Yet one of the guys in my show here just the other day came up to me specifically because last year I said there's 500 ounces of silver in a Tomahawk cruise missile. And he just came up to me and said, listen, I was on that program. And this is all declassified, what I'm going to tell you, he said. And he showed me pictures. He said, well, why don't you know, you're right. There's almost exactly between, I think he said 15 or 16 or 16 and 17 kilograms of silver in the tip of a Tomahawk cruise missile. And he showed me all sorts of pictures, said, you're right. And it's not just Tomahawks, it's all the high-tech weaponry and aerospace and all of these things where copious amounts of silver are used, yet the Silver Institute ignores it. So from a supply-demand fundamental, where they tell us we're 200 plus million ounces, again, a shortfall in 2023, similar to 2022, yet expansion in uses, and an asset that's priced right now at about 80 to 1 in its relation to gold, that's coming out of the ground at 7 to 1. There's so many reasons I could sit here and talk for much longer than 20 minutes about the value and the fundamentals and the potential of silver that at the same time to me is intrinsic historical wealth. I don't think I've ever seen in 34 years in finance a better opportunity than in silver. And I mean that honest to God to my soul.
Silver Institute, you brought them up. So I'm curious, like, what the motivation is for them to leave it out. Is it just ethical reasons? Because, like, and I hate even asking that question.
No, it's a
like
good
we're
one.
On the precipice of World War III.
Well,
so the usage of silver in weaponry and missiles.
Well, but what is the military?
Literally explode.
Yeah, what is the? That's good. That's true. No pun or pun intended.
What does
the military industrial complex do? It funds wars all around the world and has for years, provides the weaponry. And like even listening to Biden talk about what's going on in the Ukraine, so we will always give them the ability to protect themselves with weapons. So we're selling them weapons that, you know, a $2 million warhead, that boom, it blows up. And well, there goes 500 ounces of silver. And how many times are those being fired? Boom, 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 boom. So if you want to continue to be the military industrial complex to fund this massive machine of wealth and death, well, the only way to do it is to keep the most important part of that asset that you need to build that machine and all of its tools, you keep it out of the limelight. You do that. Ask yourself, Kai, why would four or five commercial banks have the U.S. or Western-based commercial banks hold the largest short position in any commodity traded on COMEX? Why silver? Why in it's as dumb as a mud wall when you think of it logically. Why? Gold is running because gold's not used in military applications. And if it is, only a very small amount. But why would they short the hell out of a commodity like silver at a time when a country like India over the last 2 years is about 400 million ounces? That's more than is on COMEX. So the point of it is that, again, Occam's razor. What's the most logical answer? Well, that's to me it. When you look at the supply-demand fundamentals from the Silver Institute, they'll tell you that solar panels was the biggest use. No, it's not. It's military applications, which, strangely enough, is omitted.
Interesting. It's been a long day.
It's okay, bro.
A great question. That's why I have my hand already out there. So silver price as well. Like, what is it telling you? Like, I had a conversation with somebody on our channel last week, and I called Silver Dr. Silver, because it seems like it's telling me something that the recession is living. Like, is it completely decoupled from the gold price? It's not moving in parallel or in tandem anymore. Usually it reacts a bit more violently, but we haven't even seen those spikes as of late. What do you make of that?
I'll answer it two ways. First of all, when we talk about the price, right? The price of silver on the last day of the year in Shanghai was $2.25 higher than it was on COMEX, a 10% difference in price. So, you know, when you talk about the real value of silver, they're slowly turning up the heat in Shanghai, where they're creating an arbitrage event where traders in London and Chicago and New York will buy silver off of the COMEX and the LBMA and deliver it for an arbitrage of over 10%, which is big in the arbitrage world in Shanghai. It ain't ever coming back at that point. So again, the suppression of the price is masking the real value. But when you talk about recession, I don't know if I want to lump silver into the Dr. Copper story where it's showing us a recession is coming. I would rather point to the inversion of the yield curve, which 11 out of the last 11 inversions has been a precursor to a recession. So to me, technical analysis or looking at silver in that way in a rigged market sends maybe incorrect signals. I look to the fact that the big money is accumulating silver, and it's very counterintuitive. It's being held down even when we didn't see a recession on the horizon. So I think it's one of these deals, Kai, where you can only suppress a market over an extended period of time by pushing it in the direction that it is going. And for a very long time, no one cared about gold or silver. They just wanted treasuries and U.S.-based securities and real estate. No one cared about it. Things are changing, and I think silver will have its day. And you can see that by a country like India, who purchased so much silver over the last 2 years, or China, who's been buying it, or all of these countries slowly draining the exchanges, silver will have its day. And the fundamentals, I think, speak to that. I guess we'll have to see how it plays out.
Let's try to make the transition from the workshop room to the conference floor here as well. Like, what role do the mining stocks play for you, and should play in a you know, forward-looking portfolio?
I think everyone should own some. I think you use the Swiss asset allocation model for success. And we can lump cryptocurrencies into that too. The base of your pyramid, like the 60% of it, would be things like precious metals, paid for real estate, cash, where it's safe, it's stable, it's liquid. The middle portion of your pyramid could be treasuries paying, short-term treasuries paying 5%. The top 10% of your pyramid would be cryptocurrencies, would be mining shares. The volatility that offers tremendous upside cuts both ways and offers tremendous downside risk as well. And so by allocating it appropriately, you can really, really, really outperform if you hit it on the top 10%. But the theory is, if you lose everything on the top 10%, you break even on the middle portion, 20 or 30. As long as the base of your pyramid is not risked inordinately to speculation, you'd end up not going backwards, just making your 2 or 3%. And what's interesting, you go back over the last 25 years since the beginning of the century, gold has outpaced just about everything. It's up 7.8% per year annualized. The S&P 7 and the bond market nowhere near. So it's acting very much like a bond. But the bottom line is simply that I think there is a place for mining shares, and they are related, but they're cousins. They're not the same thing as holding it in your own possession with no counterparty risk. They offer great leverage and should be part of your portfolio, just not in the base. So you don't want to invert your financial pyramid and risk all of that to speculation. That can make you a lot, but can cut the other way as well.
Absolutely. No, there are a lot of great keynote speakers here, and I've seen you mingling with some of them. Did you learn anything particular from them as well? I love exchanging thoughts and ideas with them as well. Like, we just interviewed Grant Williams, Brand Johnson. I know you know them all really well as well. Anything new you learned from them?
I just had lunch with Mark Moss, and he blew my mind because he opened my mind into the way that he looks at Bitcoin. And I've never been a Bitcoin basher. I've always said it doesn't need to be mutually exclusive, or they don't. Doesn't need to be either or. And he explained to me his logic upon it. And I thought it was very impressive and very illuminating. And I think on a broader scale, it's one of the things that troubles me the most about the state of affairs in this country right now, in that we're not open to listening to other people's opinions and other people's viewpoints. And it's cancel culture, where if you don't listen to me and you don't believe me, well, I got no time for you. But that you never grow if you do that. And, you know, I'm a good example of that, because I could have easily said, let's go on to another subject. And I wouldn't have learned something that is giving me curiosity to look into it deeper. So that would be the one thing that, for me personally, unfortunately, when I'm here, I don't have the time to listen to all these people. But I know Grant Williams gave a great speech on gold, and I was impressed with that. But that's just same old, same old. The bottom line is, I would take away from is that there are people here who are saying the same thing, only different. And I think it's important for people to broaden their horizons and listen, and then make an educated decision rather than following the herd.
Education. That's the number one takeaway. Yeah. There's so much great content out there. We do great interviews together as well.
Appreciate that, brother.
Yeah, there's so much good content out there.
Yeah.
Educate yourself.
Well, and when in the world I grew up in, I started my company before the internet. And everyone read newsletters. And most of my clients would read 6 or 8 of them. And I think that's an appropriate way of saying it, because you gather information as much as you can and then make your own appraisal of it. You don't have to follow the herd. You can be a leader instead of a follower, based upon your research, your due diligence, but that requires effort. And guys like you and I, who spend lots of time researching and studying so that we don't look like fools when we do these things, well, we've done the research, and then we have our own opinions. And I think it's validated by the research. And if I'm wrong, well, it's easier to be wrong when I came to my own conclusion based upon my own research. And if I'm right, it makes it that much sweeter. And I think that's something that's missing here. People are lazy and they don't do their own due diligence. And that's what I would take away from a show like this. Come here with no preconceived notions. Listen, take it in, do some follow-up research, and then make your conclusion based upon facts and educate yourself. And that's what this kind of show allows you to do.
It does a fantastic job at it as well.
Yeah.
Annie, thank you so much for your time.
Kai, good to see you, brother.
Really appreciate
it. Yeah, man, absolutely.
Where can we find more of you?
MilesFranklin.com. Google my name. There's about 10,000 videos out there. So.
Five of us do interviews.
But I like coming on your show, Kai, and I always look forward to it. And I wish you safe travels back to Germany. I'm heading back stateside now. So Anyways, till we meet next time, I'll look forward to picking up where we left off.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for everybody tuning in. If you haven't done so, please hit that subscribe button, because I know 85% of you watching are not subscribed. Let's please change it so we can bring guests like Andy and Grant and Danielle all back on the channel more often, have fantastic conversations. We truly appreciate it. I hope this was education for you. It was for me, as always. Thank you so much for tuning in. Leave a comment, leave a like. We'll be back with lots more from Mike. Thank you so much.
Thank you.